In the previous installments of the tale of the Baruch V'Yasner and how he became a Mekubal and a Chosid of the various Baal Shem Tov, up to including the Mistral Baal Shem Tov, we concluded with Rabbi Baruch being about 60 years of age, giving over his business to his two sons, Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Avrom, after he gave quite a considerable amount of money to Tzedakah, and how he was continuing in his path of spreading the message of Hasidus. And this, the final installment, will tell about the Baruch's final days and his visit with the Baal Shem Tov, and also how the Baal Shem Tov impacted on his two children, Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Avrom, as well as how Hasidus finally permeated the Misnagdic stronghold of Slutsk. It was about this time when Baruch's estate near Slutsk was already a growing settlement that a young man appeared one day. He was about 30 years of age. No one knew who he was or where he had come from. He seemed to keep himself apart from people, except that he began to come into the yeshiva and listen to the shiurim, the lectures that were given by the Rosh Yeshiva, the deans of the school. He would first listen to the teachers giving the shiur, and then to the students repeating it. At such times, he would be so interested that he too participated in their discussions. Very shortly, he was recognized as a real Torah scholar, and Baruch, and also Abnashi Yisrael, the head of the yeshiva, began to take a keen interest in the stranger. They tried to find out who his family was, but without success. His lips remained sealed on that subject. Baruch was so impressed with this mysterious newcomer's Torah knowledge that he invited him to give a shiur in his yeshiva. "But do please tell me who you are," he implored. "If you really are in earnest in asking me to give a shiur here, then you must promise me not to press me to tell you who I am, nor must you attempt to discover where I come from," replied the stranger. Baruch and his good friend Rabbi Menashe Yisrael, the Rosh Yeshiva, talked the matter over among themselves. "I could even suspect that the Misnagdim have sent this young man to see if we are connected with the Kabbalists and mystics," suggested Rabbi Menashe Yisrael. It was true that Kabbalah was not taught at Baruch's Yeshiva, nor was anything done specifically to influence the students that they be favorably disposed towards the mystics. But many stories were told of them, were told to the Talmidim, to the students, about mystics and Kabbalists, and it was clear that their feelings towards them were of the friendliest. It was obvious that in Baruch's yeshiva, the students were being prepared for a new way of life, a role which would be of inestimable value to the mystics and Kabbalists later on in their work. But despite Rav Nashi Yisrael's suspicions about this young man, Baruch thought so highly of his scholarship that he decided to ask him if he would become a teacher at the yeshiva. He felt that no matter who he might be, he dared not let him go. It is possible that Baruch thought that even if Rav Nashi Yisrael's suspicions were correct, his stay at the yeshiva would bring him over to their side. He felt sure that in the course of time, he would find out what he wanted to know about this secretive young scholar. And so it was arranged that the newcomer take over a class of the best students at the yeshiva, for his abilities were recognized to be far and above the ordinary. The stranger gave a shiur 3 times a week, and the students were delighted with the lessons, as was Baruch as well. Baruch was still disappointed, however, at getting no nearer to finding out who this new teacher really was. Rabbi Menashe and his sons, who were also teachers at the yeshiva, kept an eye on the young man in the hope that they would find out if he were in fact sent there by the Misnagdim. They listened to his every word, both in class and outside, but they learned nothing to support their suspicions of him. This pleased Baruch very much, for he liked the young man and was glad that nothing had transpired to prove him wrong in engaging the young man as a teacher at the yeshiva. Nevertheless, he was determined to find out who he was. Was it not a paradox that he, Baruch, who had so much contact with mystics and experience of them, should have such a mystic in his very midst and not be able to find out anything about him? He was convinced that he was a brilliant scholar. He would also have liked to have known something of this young man's ideas about divine service, Avodas Hashem. Finally, Baruch had an inspiration. He decided to ask his new teacher if he would agree that they have a shiur together on Rambam. He felt that in his closer contact with him, he would be better able to assess his spiritual outlook. 3 weeks passed, and these private lessons continued, but although Baruch was most friendly in his attitude to the young teacher, all he could find out was that the latter was very well learned in metaphysics and books on ethics, and that he was very methodical in his ways. The stranger knew very thoroughly all about the Ramban, the Bechaya, the Rambam, and the Ralbag, and their metaphysical and theoretical writings. Baruch could see that the young man had a sufficient conception as to the various ideas of all these authors, as also regarding the differences of philosophical outlook between them. The young man maintained that the Ramban and the Bachya were Kabbalists, while the Rambam was not a Mekubal, although he knew something about this study. All this confused Baruch completely. He had not divined from the young man's talk where his sympathies lay. But he was happy to see that not only was the young man familiar with the subject of Kabbalah, but that he approved of it as well. This he deduced from the manner in which the young man had made the comparison between the ideas of the Ramban and Rabbeinu Bachya and those of the Rambam and the Ralbag, the latter being more philosophers than Mekubalim. Baruch was delighted. This all surely went to prove that it was impossible for this young man to have been sent to him on a spying mission. When some time passed and Baruch had made no new discoveries about his young friend, he decided to ask him point blank what was his opinion about Kabbalah. The young man replied that he was extremely interested in the subject and had spent much time in studying such books on Kabbalah as Avodas HaKodesh, Derech Emunah, Tehillas Yankov, and Pardes Rimonim by the latter by Rav Moshe Cordovero, the Ramak. He also knew a good deal about the writings of the Ri HaKodesh, saying that one could not be definite about these, as they had been rewritten by someone. The young man expressed the opinion that Kabbalah ought to be studied with great caution and never without a good commentary, because the very tiniest mistake in the translation of the idea could result in the greatest damage. He made his point by quoting from the Gemara Sota, page 20a, Daf Chof Amud Aleph, where Rabbi Meir, visiting Rabbi Shmuel, was asked what his work was. He answered that he was a scribe whose task it was to transcribe the Tanakh. Then Rabbi Shmuel observed, "My son, take great care, for your work is holy. For if you omit a letter or add a letter, you can cause destruction to the world." The young man wanted to underline his opinion that in studying Kabbalah, one could do great harm if one studied it without the necessary knowledge or right approach. "For this reason," concluded the young man, "I hesitate to approach the study of the writings of the Ari, for his line in Kabbalah is not clearly defined." Baruch was now absolutely convinced that in his young friend he found no opponent to Kabbalah, but in fact one whose sympathies were entirely for this study. He now wanted to know what his opinions were regarding the storm, those mystics who wandered about carrying out their mission of doing good in an unobtrusive a manner as possible and hiding their scholarship under a cloak of simplicity. Baruch watched for an opportunity of asking the young man what he thought of those followers of the Baal Shem of Zamoksh, and now the followers of Rab Odom Baal Shem of Rupchitz, who was the successor to the Baal Shem of Zamoksh, Rabbi Yoel Baal Shem. Baruch talked the matter over with his friend Rabbi Menashe Yisrael, telling him all that he had learned about the young Rosh Yeshiva. He had in fact formed his own observations and arrived at a very high opinion of this young man, upon whom at first he had looked with some measure of suspicion. He had convinced himself that his qualities were of the highest and his character of the finest. His scholarship added to such a fine character made the rarest combination a perfect man. After a short time had passed, Baruch found his sought-for opportunity and asked the young man what he thought of the mystics about whom the Jewish world was divided in its judgment. As far as I was able to judge during the 3 years I spent in wandering about until I came here, replied the young man without hesitation, these mystics do a great service to the Jewish people. He told Baruch that 4 years previously he had made up his mind to leave his family for a period of 5 years. 3 of these 5 years he meant to spend in Golos, in exile, as it were, to go out into the world and to study people and their ways. And the remaining 2 years he intended to spend in Torah study, so that all in all he would emerge spiritually a better person. He had completed his 3 years of exile before he had reached the estate of Baruch, and finding such a splendid yeshiva established there, with such exceptional students and teachers, he felt that this was the place where he would wish to spend his 2 years of concentrated devotion to the Torah. Baruch was gratified, particularly as this was the first time that the young man had ventured to talk of himself, his views, and his purpose in life. It was proof positive that the latter had now full confidence in Baruch and found no need to be secretive about himself with him. Having begun with his confidences, the young man continued. He told Baruch that when he came to the first little town during his wanderings, he met there 5 others who also spent their time in exile. These 5 seemingly traveled about together. 2 of them were scholars, and so he enjoyed some interesting discussions with them. The other 3 chose to appear as ordinary people, and wherever they went, they always associated with the uneducated, simple Jews. Later in his travels, he met other Jews who were wandering about in exile. Among them were great scholars and Kabbalists who had taken upon themselves the penance of self-imposed exile. Others appeared to be just ordinary Jews without education. Many were the stories he heard about mystics, but he had never actually met any in person. He told Baruch that whenever he reached the town, he always made for the cemetery, seeking out the small houses of the grave diggers. The reason for this, he told him, was that he knew he would be left to study there in peace, for obviously such a place was not one to attract company. And why did you not go to the guest house provided for wayfarers in every town? Asked Baruch. You could have studied there too unmolested. Well, you know well as I do that when a scholar comes to these guest houses, they make a fuss over him, give him a special room, and do him great honor. I never cared for such exceptional treatment, and never wished to have special privileges on account of my Torah knowledge. He further told Baruch about his experiences during his exile. Once he reached an estate not far from Shvinsian, near Vilna. This estate was leased by a certain wealthy Jew of the name of Tzadik Yechiel. He had a base of medrash built there and had invited Torah scholars to come and study there, providing them with all their needs. Tzadik Yechiel was a very charitable man and extremely hospitable, but with one exception. This was in the case of preachers whom he could not tolerate. Whenever some misguided preacher chanced to visit his estate, he was always immediately given a generous sum of money and politely asked to leave. The Jews on his estate, who had few chances of hearing a preacher, used to beg of Tzadik Yechiel to allow this one to stay, but he would not have him even stay overnight. Why must you listen to the foolish sermons of these preachers when you can go to the Beis HaMedrash and study for yourselves? He would retort impatiently. And if you cannot study for yourselves, you know we have great scholars right here in the Beis HaMedrash, and you can listen to them. There's no need for you to waste your time with preachers, he concluded emphatically. Tzadik Yechiel had in truth provided the Jews on his estate with excellent opportunities of studying or hearing Torah. The scholars he had established in his Beis HaMedrash taught as well as studied, and adapted the teachings according to the age and abilities of the pupils. So the Yechiel saw to it that whenever a child was found to have a good brain with an aptitude for study, encouraged him until he reached the standard required, then sent him to a yeshiva where he supported him at his own expense. The reason for his intense dislike of preachers went back to a story about Sonny Kihil, which the younger Shishiva heard from one of the Jews on the estate. When Sadik Yechiel was but a young man, he was very uneducated. He amassed a great fortune, but spiritually he was very poor. He could hardly read, and then with many mistakes. He always confused a base with a chof and a dalet with a resh. The result was naturally chaotic, and he was in consequence much laughed at. He was also at that time not very concerned about carrying out mitzvahs, simply because he knew no better. All his time was spent in business association with non-Jewish landowners, and sometimes he joined them in their frivolities, and so he learned from them to become like them. But uneducated as he was extremely good-hearted and generous. He distributed charity on a large scale. Being childless, he found an orphanage and had it equipped with every convenience, all at his expense. One day there appeared in Shmintzion a preacher of the type well known at that time. Sadik Yechiel went to hear him preach. The preacher followed along the lines of all the preachers of that period, giving a long and marrow-freezing description of the terrible punishment that awaited all sinners after the death. He particularly emphasized the punishment of all those who were uneducated in Torah, their greatest sin being that they had not given sufficient honor to Torah scholars. He quoted at length from the sayings of the sages to illustrate the heavy punishment awaiting these ignoramuses in afterlife. This sermon made a deep impression upon Sadik Yechiel and made him feel very bitter. What would be the use of his continuing to do deeds of charity and other good deeds if it would all be lost through the fact of his being uneducated? If that were really the case, he might as well get all he could out of this life and enjoy it to the full, for according to the preacher, he was going to have a terrible time afterwards in the world to come. From that day on, the Sadik Yechiel was a changed man. He gave up the little Judaism he had and went over completely to the life of the Gentiles. He joined the non-Jewish landowners in every manner of merrymaking. Naturally, the spirit also penetrated into his own household, and he indulged in parties, drinking, and card playing. All his friends were now men of leisure whose sole purpose in life was pleasure. Only in one respect did he remain unchanged, and that was in his goodness of heart and generosity. On the contrary, he now gave charity more generously than before, for in his association with these estate owners he had become very, very rich. He had no intention of being religious, but in his opinion, goodness was not necessarily connected with religion. This state of affairs might have continued indefinitely if not for the fact that he and his wife were still childless. They yearned desperately for a child and went about with secretly aching hearts. Then one day a stranger came to Shmintzion. He went about in an unobtrusive manner with no desire to attract attention to himself. However, one had but to exchange a few words with him to realize that he was someone above the ordinary. Whether by accident or design, this stranger found himself on the estate of Tzadik Yechiel and met him there. The manner and conversation of this superior Torah scholar were so unexpected in their friendliness that Tzadik Yechiel could not fail to be impressed and moved. Instead of treating him like an ignoramus, the stranger spoke to Tzadik Yechiel with the greatest respect, telling him how great it was the good he was doing with his manifold charitable deeds, and explaining to him, "Charity is a very important matter, you know. Judaism is much more concerned with good deeds than merely with Torah study. Our sages say theory is not as important as deeds." They explain further that what a Jew must have is faith and a good heart. It was their faith that helped the Jews achieve their exodus from Egypt. These words from the stranger, so marked in their contrast to those of the visiting preacher, sank deep into the consciousness of Tzadik Yechiel. He began to treat the stranger with great respect and took an interest in providing him with comfortable accommodations within easy access of himself. He took every opportunity of conversing with the stranger, for he felt it to be a balm to his wounded soul. Little by little, Tzadik Yechiel gave his various parties and social visits to the non-Jewish landowners and came slowly back into the Jewish fold. At the end of 2 years, he had once again become strictly observant. Having heard of a great Kabbalist in Poland who was said to have the power of his blessings materializing, Tzadik Yechiel and his wife traveled to see him. They told him they were childless and life had no meaning for them because they had no child. The Kabbalist gave them his blessing. To their joy, they were blessed in due course with children. Sometime later, it was learned that the stranger who had spent so much effort in bringing Tzadik Yechiel back to Yiddishkeit was one of those wandering mystics. When I heard the story, the young teacher told Baruch, I acquired a great respect for mystics and always kept an eye open in case I might meet one of them during my wanderings. Their main achievement seemed to be that they awakened a feeling of worthiness in the hearts of ordinary Jews, encouraging them to reach a higher level in their spiritual life, which made them later take a greater interest in performing the commandments and studying Torah. All this was not new to Baruch. He expressed his regret that the young teacher had not found an opportunity of coming into closer contact with the mystics so that he could learn more about them. On the next occasion, when a mystic turned up at the estate of Baruch, it was one whom Rav Nachi Yisrael knew well. This mystic happened to see the young Rosh Yeshiva, recognized him, and turned to Rav Nachi Yisrael saying, Do you know who that young man is? He is the Gaon Rav Aaron Yankov of Pinkshev, known as the Eloi, the genius of Pinkshev. He is a descendant of the Rabbeinu Tam. He then related what he knew of this brilliant young man. When he was 15 years old, he already had a name for his genius. When he was 30 years of age, he was offered the headship of the senior Talmudic Old Academy in Polotsk to succeed the renowned Gaon Reb Tzvi. Reb Nachi Yisrael quickly told Baruch of his startling discovery of the identity of their young teacher. But naturally, they kept this knowledge a secret. They were only sorry that they could not show the young man any greater attention or pay him any more respect than before, for he had only accepted the position with them on condition that they made no effort to find out who he was or from where he had come. When the end of the 2 years which Rav Aaron Yankov had arranged to stay at the yeshiva came around, and this was the stranger's name, he told Baruch that he would now be returning home to his family. Rabbi Baruch offered him a large sum of money as a salary for the period he had been teaching there, but Rav Aaron Yankov refused to accept even one penny. In that case, said Baruch, I would like to offer you a permanent position in our yeshiva and would provide you and your family with all your requirements. And Baruch suggested that Rav Aaron Yankov stay on at the yeshiva and his family be sent for. But the latter declined, as he knew this would mean that his address and identity would be discovered. He said he would accept the position, but preferred to go and fetch the family himself. Baruch had no option but to agree, and so Rav Aaron Yankov left the yeshiva and journeyed homeward to his reunion with his wife and family, whom he had not seen for 5 years. When Rav Aaron Yankov returned to the yeshiva with his family after a few months, Baruch handed over the management of the yeshiva into his hands and those of Rav Nachi Yisrael. He wanted to be free to carry out his long-cherished dream of journeying to Rabbi Odom Baal Shem and learning from him Torah and Maisim Tovim, virtuous deeds. Baruch had spent a great deal of time with the Baal Shem of Zamech, and now he wished to have the same spiritual uplift by visiting Rabbi Odom Baal Shem, whom he had seen during his visit to Slutsk, but had not had the opportunity of spending any time with. Baruch also wished to hand over to Rav Odom a large sum of money for the purpose of supporting the mystics. He took in addition another large sum of money, which he himself distributed among charitable and educational institutions in the various towns and townlets through which he passed on his long journey. Baruch was away from home for 3 years, returning home in the year 1722, after having spent 8 months with Rav Odom Baal Shem and Rupshis. While he was there, he studied Kabbalah under him and met some of the most important mystics of the period. He took the opportunity of telling the Baal Shem about Rav Aaron Yankov and of his reluctance to study the writings of the Arizal and the reason for this. To Baruch's surprise, the Baal Shem made no comment about it. When Baruch became 70 years of age, he again visited the Baal Shem. This time, the trip only took him 1 year. Menashe Yisrael had died in the meantime, and this grieved his friend Baruch very much. 5 years later, Baruch learned that Rav Odom Baal Shem had passed on the leadership of the Mekubolim to Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem Tov, saying that his teacher, the prophet Achia Shiloini, had told him that so it was decreed in heaven. Now Baruch wanted to meet the new leader, and this time he also took his two sons with him so that they too could meet the Baal Shem Tov and learn of his new methods of leadership and his teachings. to their great astonishment, they had no sooner crossed the threshold than the Baal Shem Tov told them who they were and all that happened in their lives. The Baal Shem Tov then told Baruch that on his return home, he should make preparations for traveling to the Holy Land, where he promised him he would live to a grand old age. Baruch and his son stayed at the Baal Shem Tov and closed for a month, and as soon as they returned home, Baruch set about making his preparations for his journey to Eretz Yisrael. He now prepared a complete account of his business and property, which he left in the hands of his sons, stipulating that they continue to maintain the yeshiva which he had founded and supported for so many years. His yeshiva, which was a preparatory ground for the seeds of Chassidus, was to be continued on the same lines as until now. The sons were also to continue to maintain the 10 scholars who were appointed to study Torah at the Beis HaMedrash. The sons were also to keep up the guest house for wayfarers, which Baruch had established on his estate. Baruch also reminded his sons that he expected them to live like all followers of the Baal Shem Tov, and that at least once every 3 years they should pay him a visit. When Baruch had arranged everything to his satisfaction, he left on his journey. But before he finally left for the Holy Land, he first called on the Baal Shem Tov, where he remained for a month. Then, leaving close for the last time, he continued on his way to Eretz Yisrael. Baruch's sons, Yosef and Avram, carried out their father's wishes to the letter, and before 3 years had gone by, they paid a visit to their leader, the Baal Shem Tov, in Tlust. They told them as follows. The Baal Shem Tov told them as follows. They should rent on lease the estates of Prince Radzivill, with the rivers, mills, inns, brick plants, and all else attached to these estates. They should then rent them out to Jews, who thereby have the means of making a living. The Baal Shem Tov also told them to transfer their father's yeshiva to Slutsk. Yosef and Avram lost no time in carrying out their leader's instructions. They had a huge building erected in Slutsk. The Chanukah Sabayis, the dedication of the new yeshiva, took place in the month of Sivan in the year Tov Kuf, 1740. Baruch's sons invited their leader to the Chanukah Sabayis, the new building, and the Baal Shem Tov accepted and came. He stayed in Slutsk for a whole month. Thus it was that Slutsk, the city of fanatical opponents of Kabbalah and Hasidus, of mysticism and Hasidism, had the honor of seeing formerly Rabbi Odom Baal Shem and afterwards Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem Tov. All the followers of the Baal Shem Tov naturally availed themselves of the opportunity of visiting him during his stay in Slutsk. Rab Nisnaf Harki, Rab Yitzchok Shol's father, also called to see him and made a note of all the Torah he had heard from the Baal Shem Tov so that he could repeat it all to his friends when he got home. Rab Nisnaf's son, Rab Yitzchok Shol, swallowed it eagerly, and that is how, when the young Baruch, this being Rab Baruch, the father of the Alter Rebbe, spent Pesach at the house of the Smith in the Bromsel, he heard all these stories from his good friend Yitzchok Shol, and particularly this story which we just related, all about the Baruch Vyazhner and their kesher, their connection with the Baal Shem Tov.